Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Horrible Podcast. I am Brian.
I'm Tyler.
And I'm Drew.
And doing a special episode tonight. It's our 100th episode.
Episodes.
We tried to make it very, well, it is very special in that you are joining us for it, but the fact that we are all balls to the wall busy wouldn't allow for anything more than what we are offering you now, which is still a great thing, because with us as a special guest is Shahab Zaghari. I hope I pronounced that correctly and didn't
hurt. Perfect. Excellent. Thanks for having me, guys.
No, thanks for coming on. He is the owner of GC Records, also a filmmaker. He has done a short for all you Dark Tower fans out there called Susanna's Lesson. He's also, which is just out, came out on the 19th, so you can watch it now, and he'll give us all the details on that. And also has a short on a Philip K. Dick short story called The Crystal Crypt.
Awesome.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. This is going to be exciting. We picked a really awesome movie to have a conversation about with somebody else because, man, in the past we've had a real spotty time with picking movies. So we've had a run of good luck, and this is one of the best, I think, not to jump too far ahead, but this is one of the best I think we've seen in a good long while.
It was a great movie.
Up there.
Also, of note, Shahab is actually Iranian too, so it's a nice little fit for A Girl Walks Home Alone at night, since it's an Iranian vampire western.
Yeah. And you know, so then that just to kind of kick things off with that, I was really interested to see the film because I didn't know how they were going to film something like that in Iran, and they didn't.
No, they didn't at all. They totally didn't. Yeah, I thought the same thing.
That was what I thought too. This is either Iran or it's Southern California.
Yeah, as I watched it, some things happened. I was like, "There's no way the Iranian government let this happen. Like that, this would not see the light of day." Then, about halfway through, I started looking through IMDb, and I was like, "That's because that it's for a reason."
Truthfully, and I was born in LA, so I've never been to Iran. It's just I'm Iranian descent, but. The one thing that would never happen is even the pimps would never have sex tattooed on their neck. That would not happen.
No. That was when I first started questioning things. I was like, what was tattooed on the side of his head? Did you recognize what that was?
I didn't, actually.
I didn't know what it said. So
it looked very Tyson-esque in its just odd tribalism. So yeah, I'm really excited about this movie. I always do this, but I always reference other things. But if I had to place, like, for people who haven't seen the movie but are listening to the podcast, I would place it sort of like, it feels like Nicholas Winding Refn doing a Jim Jarmusch movie. That's kind
Holy
of what it,
shit. I
that's
can't,
good.
That's exactly what I wrote down.
Is it?
Yeah. No way. I said Nicholas Winding Refn's done Jim Jarmusch a great homage.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's especially right before the podcast we were talking about music. The soundtrack for this isn't available because I was like, man, I'd like to own this soundtrack. This
I know, me too.
There are a couple songs that have been released, and I sound hounded those to find out what they were. But the it's got a great, great soundtrack.
Yeah,
and it's a great film.
It feels like it feels like Quentin Tarantino as done by someone who grew up in the 80s instead of the 60s and 70s. And that, like, a lot of the songs have this really shiny, like, glimmer pop feel about them. And I really love those sort of, like, I just have to say Jim Jarmusch moments, like when they're about to kiss with the, it wasn't a Smith song, but if it were anyone else making this film, it would be like a Smith song or Morrissey in the background. So I felt like this definitely had that feel to it. And I was totally blown away, especially the sort of like Zamfir trumpet song that happened at a certain point where someone's driving and it's just like this kick-ass Western trumpet sound. I loved it. Yeah. Like the music, I just really love this movie. I usually can get sort of bored three quarters of the way through. I'm like, all right, I'm ready for this to be over. But I was completely wrapped by this entire thing. So I got to say, I was really into this movie.
And so...
Go ahead. Sorry, I was just going to say, you know, I find it very interesting that you guys are you know, it's billed as the first Iranian Western vampire, but, you know, all of the comparisons are, you know, American filmmakers and directors. And I really felt that, you know, as someone who grew up, I mean, my parents would watch and currently still watch the films that are coming out of Iran. And this is definitely an American film, you know, even down to the ending. I mean, the ending... A little tiny bit open-ended, but there was closure. When you watch Iranian films, man, I don't care if it's a horror film, you know, a mainstream film or some sort of underground film, they all have artsy, very confusing endings. And this one didn't. This one, you know, he, you know, if and not to give too much of a spoiler, but if he saw the cat, right? You guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
So if he saw the cat... and all of a sudden put two and two together, that's where an Iranian film would end. You're like, okay, is he going to kill her? Is he going to... But they, you know, it went on another 15 minutes after that. So definitely an American film.
And don't worry about spoiling things. We are notorious for doing that. So
okay. We usually only give about a millisecond spoiler alert. So people have to be quick with their pause buttons if they listen to our podcast. Because we'll be like, spoiler alert, they die.
And, spoiler alert... it's no use in saying spoiler alert when next second next breath is the spoiler
or after.
Yeah,
I'd like to do that as well.
Yeah, you might be able to hear a dog in the background, but that's not much I can do about that at this point. yeah, like my only real background with Iranian film, I think it might be a separation. I'm sure I've seen some Iranian films before and after that, but the only one that really jumps to mind is A Separation. So beyond that, like I wouldn't know. I can only speak in terms of like indie films.
Let me give you a really good, and this is the Horror Bowl podcast. It's not a horror movie, but one of my all-time favorite Iranian films.
Okay.
I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but it's called Children of Heaven.
Okay.
Amazing. It's, you know, two little kids and their world, and it's amazing.
Oh yeah. You know, I'm writing that down right now.
And I knew we were gonna, since I knew we were gonna watch this film this week, or I've known for a couple weeks.
You looked up some Iranian films so you can bring stuff up. And
unlike Tyler, I have my minor is in Iranian film specifically.
I watched the Anthony Bourdain episode where he goes to Iran to do his show there, and it was a.
See, where did you find that? Cause I can't find that anywhere.
Actually, I found it on Reddit. The place where it's good and bad happened, which was funny because if you follow Shaham on Twitter or Facebook, he posted his film in the Dark Tower subreddit of Reddit, which you have to have some balls to do that in the first place.
Right.
If you're gonna do anything that people have fans of, then you know you're taking your life into your own hands.
I mean, just doing it in general, because so many people, doesn't matter what Stephen King book it is, people are married to those characters.
Oh, right? Absolutely.
I mean, as soon as Ron Howard bought the rights to Dark Tower, there was forums upon forums of people. Yeah. I want it to be this guy or that girl or. You know,
I just had one of our friends, our mutual friends, Tyler and Drew, Will, make the comment about when I posted the Preacher thing. He jumped on it about how he was hoping they didn't cast certain people for certain parts from the comic books. I was like, man, you're just not going to make anybody happy. You can't make everybody happy.
That's how Tyler felt about Twilight.
Exactly. Yeah. I was like, he's not my hashtag, not my Edward. Yeah. No, I mean, Stephen King fans are some of the most bizarre. Like, whenever I see something on Facebook or on Twitter, if I see an article that's written about Stephen King, exactly one half of them will be like, oh my God, he's still writing books. Who reads this garbage? Like, they will take the time to shit on Stephen King. And the other half will say, like, man, I wish this was more like this other thing that I like, to prove that they've read something else by Stephen King. So I just don't, like, I am slowly learning, and I should have known before, but just don't read the comment section of anything, like of anything at all, especially when it comes to someone who has a background like Stephen King of 30 or 40 years, because no matter what you put out there in the world, which it's like, it could just be like, here is my review of this book, I like it a lot, and people will just tell you to die. Like, you have no idea. Like, fuck you for liking that. So it takes a lot of balls.
With Susanna's lesson, it's been interesting, because initially, again, we had a couple photos, you know, behind the scenes and a teaser trailer, which the trailer itself had probably 6 seconds of the 9 minute short in it. And people were livid. I mean, they were like, "What? Susanna Dean is supposed to be black." Like, that was the response. And it's like, I was so baffled, you know. And, and I was thinking, for those of you that have seen it, I know Brian has seen it. It touches on race, you know, the actual story actually, you know, he's poking and prodding her to get her riled up to shoot. And he brings up really hurtful things that go on that, you know, in this day and age of no racism, no one talks about kind of thing. So it was really interesting. But before I you know, go any further, you know, this film is an artist's rendition. You know, when you look at DeviantArt or, you know, anything online, or go to the actual novels of the Dark Tower, each novel has, you know, different paintings from different artists, and they've all represented the main characters as different skin colors and body types. I mean, it's just all over the place. So, you know, for these people to say, "Well, wow, the girl that you picked is not black enough," I mean, to me, that is so racist. I don't get it. You know,
I think you bring up a good point there, and it actually didn't dawn on me until you said that. Is that, you know, DeviantArt is full of things like, you know, TIE Fighter. Well, I have a shirt that's a TIE Fighter pilot in a bikini, you know, or that kind of stuff. Darth Vader as a samurai warrior kind of thing. Just because...
That was a recent shirt, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, actually. I think I saw it 2 days ago on something. But that same kind of concept, why can't it carry over to film, too? And that what you can make it whatever you want to make it. And the fact is that, you know... You're gonna have your detractors, but at the same time, how many of them went out and made a film and put it into the world for people?
Exactly, I would urge them to do so. You know, well, you know what, outdo me then, kind of thing. But
exactly,
you know, there's this girl. She took the Tumblr and wrote an entire essay on this director Shahab Zaghari is doing blackface in 2015. It's like, you know what, blackface is one thing. That's, you know, hey, Massa, and, you know, singing and dancing. Like, we did not do that. That was not our intention, you know, in the least. You know, I grew up in L.A., 70s and 80s. I saw black people of all shapes and sizes, all different colors. And interestingly enough, the cast and crew, when I brought up, you know, this kind of hysteria to them, they looked at me and they're like, well, Sarah isn't black. Okay, so you guys worked with her and you couldn't tell, but these people somehow, you know, and to be quite honest, she isn't, you know. Have all three of you read The Dark Tower, or at least some of it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so Roland's mother, her name was Gabrielle. And the girl who we cast, her name is Sarah Gabriella. And it was just, to me, you know, again, a book full of coincidences and the cult of 19. And I just, it was perfect. And she killed the lines. As far as I'm concerned, everybody that worked on the film did an amazing job, you know.
It's a great short.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah. No, I enjoyed it. And as a someone who is... I started reading the first Dark Tower book when I think I was like either 13 or 14 when I started, for me, and followed the whole kind of arc. I don't think I've read it as many times. Well, I can tell you I haven't read it as many times as some people out there. But
Will Harvey.
Yeah, a friend of ours has read it 3 or 4 times all the way through.
I do feel like I've read it enough to get a tattoo on my body about it, but that's
true.
I think that... The only thing I was hoping for in the film is when she referred to Roland's dick as his dirty white candle, or called someone gray meat. That's the only two things I was like, oh, we didn't get gray meat or the dirty white candle.
Where did you shoot it? I have to say, like, where did you shoot the short? Like, it actually represents perfectly what I imagined the beginning of the third book to look like. I could not have imagined a more... Like,
we had to make a couple changes just because of logistics. So,
right.
You know, when he starts, you know, freaking out because of Jake and all of that, he actually starts edging toward a cliff, and we just couldn't find a cliff. But it was actually this little village called Duck Creek Village in Utah. I mean, a few cabins, and that's about it. And it was fun. It was the first time I had directed anything outside. So the Philip K. Dick one that we did, The Crystal Crypt, that was all sound stages. Yeah. So everything was controlled, lighting, sound. I mean, we had ATVs, you know, driving by, and it was the light. I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed. I mean, I noticed it because I worked on the film, but oh man, the color correction was such a bitch because sure. The sun kept going in and out of the trees. I mean, it was insane. Yeah. It was insane. But okay, so and you guys are from the South, right?
Right.
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so yeah. a lot of the people who are kind of shit talking, one of the things they're saying is, Roland would never have a Southern accent. Huh, hillbilly. I'm like, what? Okay, first of all, how do you know what the high speech sounded like? Yeah. And second of all, why does a Southern accent automatically mean hillbilly? I don't get that. Going back to the racism.
Yeah, well, historically, like, there's a Drive-By Trucker song that says racism exists everywhere. It just plays better with a Southern accent. So I think, like, Southern equals, a lot of people just think that. And, I mean,
What I took from it is like the whole idea of Roland, you know, the Roland being kind of the cowboy, and that kind of, although it may not have been a Southern accent in my mind as I read the book, it may not have been a Southern accent, but it definitely had the twang of like a country western twang to it.
Yeah. Well, because the other thing that we had to do was,
yeah, there we go, John Wayne.
We had to, you know, and this is something that, again, everybody that's weighing in on it, from this podcast to everybody online or Reddit, are the fans. And I had to make something for the non-fans. I had to make it so that they could understand. First of all, it's a scene from the beginning of book three. So there's two novels of backstory that I had to somehow, And so, the people who haven't read it, they're going to look at a cowboy, and if he doesn't have a certain specific, accent, they're going to be turned off by it. And I had to include everybody.
Everyone wants everything to be the canon the way that they want to. Like, they want everything to be a very specific way. I mean, so you're...
I think Patton Oswalt is probably the best person when it comes to talking about people and their expectations versus what they get kind of thing. I don't have a specific example to...
Like a joke? You don't have a specific line or joke?
But a lot of his... He used to write when Mr. Show had the website, the Bob and David... Mr. Show with Bob and David.com, I think is what it was. He used to write a column about this super fan guy that would write him... he would write... The first part of his letter would be about how bad Patton Oswalt sucked and his joke sucked. And then the next part would be treatments from scripts that he'd written. but it was the same thing. It's just like, this is what I imagine. And there's... Yeah. And the stuff that he imagined, it was... it didn't even come close to being good at all. It's just that in his mind, he'd made that up as what was going to be the end-all, be-all.
There's a difference between something being correct and something being good. I think a lot of super fans of things want something to be accurate but not necessarily good. Because, when they made, eventually we have to get into the movie, but like when they made the first X-Men, they didn't give Wolverine a blue and yellow suit because that would look stupid. That would be accurate. Like, I remember, I was reading a Fantastic Four comic last night, and I think Flame On is the dumbest goddamn thing that a superhero could say, just because it sounds stupid. And so I remember someone telling me, when the movie came out and they put that in the trailer, I was like, that's the stupidest goddamn thing in the trailer. And they're like, well, but that's what he says in the comic. I'm like, yeah, but they probably shouldn't do that in a movie where they want a lot of people to go.
I don't know. I think there's a difference between... I think you're right. Fans do want accuracy, but I think they want accuracy and good at the same time. And I don't think being
they're not mutually exclusive
means it's bad.
Yeah.
But I think also a lot of times some of the people who end up making these things that have these huge fan bases, that ends up being the problem is they're not fans themselves. And that always goes back to the first G.I. Joe movie. Steven Summers had no idea what this stuff was.
Yeah.
The John Chu sequel, Retaliation, might not be a good film, but it's
way
good
better
G.I. Joe movie, and that's all anyone was looking for was a good G.I. Joe movie. I think that comes down to is you end up with people who just have no clue, especially with comic books, especially early comic book movies. There's rarely anyone who had an idea what
Daredevil
was about. And Mark Steven Johnson became the the king of those. He got to do Ghost Rider as well. So
I've heard though that the director's cut of Daredevil is actually pretty good. I've never seen it, but you know, and
it has a great costume. That's still a fantastic costume. Yeah.
It has that one shot where it's like pans up the side of the building and shows Daredevil, like shows, you know, I mean, it shows Ben Affleck, but Ben Affleck's just standing on the side of the building. That looks pretty badass even now.
Michael Clark Duncan was brilliant casting as a real Kingpin as well. Yeah. I mean, there are certain things that it got right. There are just so much more that it didn't.
We can't really go on a tangent. But
thanks for listening to the comic book podcast.
No.
I'm really excited about the new Daredevil series, though. I mean, who they get as Kingpin? What's his name? Gomer Pyle from. What is his name? He's on the
Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah, he's playing Kingpin.
That's right.
I'm really excited about that. It's gonna be pretty awesome.
Hey, if we're gonna nerd out, what about in the film that we're talking about? The Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Way to bring it back.
But the appearance of Ron Jeet from How I Met Your Mother.
Yeah. Yes. That.
Is that what you wanted to bring up, Brian?
No, I didn't even.
I was gonna get to that though. Yeah,
I've never watched How I Met Your Mother. I'm sorry.
Marshall Manesh, he's in a lot of stuff. He was in True Lies and a bunch of other shit. Yeah.
But that was the first thing I thought of. I was like, Ron Jeet. He's the dad. He's the drug addicted daddy.
Oh, yes. Okay. The drug addicted dad that was yelling at his son towards the end about what he was doing. And I'm like, you're a fucking heroin junkie. They yell at someone else about getting their life in order.
Yeah. When I saw Marshall Manesh, I think that was the first moment when I thought, hey, this wasn't made in Iran unless like he's contractually obligated to make so and so, you know, Iranian films. Like that was the first moment where I was like, I don't think this is necessarily made in Iran.
As the American ambassador to Iran, you have to make this many films, Iranian films.
Yeah. So, what were you saying, Brian? What was
did anybody else notice the Nintendo Power Gun on the pimp's table as he was getting high?
Oh, really?
I was like, oh, that's awesome. Nintendo? It was. I watched it a few times. I was like, Nintendo Power Gun.
Saeed.
And then that also led to the confusion. I was like, well, maybe it is Iran, because maybe they don't have real guns to put into the film.
That's one thing they would have.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
Music, probably not. But you know what? The one thing that I did like about it is that for the untrained eye, they did a great job. I mean, you couldn't tell what city they filmed it in, and in the story, it's Bad City. Like that's the it's this fictional city, and all of the dialogue. I mean, everything. The accents were spot on. Yeah. I mean, it was definitely good. I could see why it got distributed and picked up the way it did.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch it with because at the film festival, Elijah Wood is introducing this film since Spectre Vision, put it out. We have a bunch.
It had a lot of vanity. It has a lot of vanity tags, I believe, if I recall. It has several.
Yes, it does. But since his company, or I guess, distributed it, it's attracted a lot of people who probably aren't ready for this kind of artsy, hard,
I can see a lot of people being confused by this movie.
Which I find enjoyable as hell. I'm going to love sitting there watching everyone's face as they turn to look at each other and be like, what's going on? I got forced to watch some culture, even though I was just here to see Elijah Wood.
The interesting thing about Elijah Wood, if you pay any attention to the direction his career has taken, though, is you would not be surprised at all by this.
No, absolutely not. But I think that everyone who thinks he's,
Frodo Baggins.
These are people who watched Maniac or Grand Piano.
I don't even think the people who watched The Lord of the Rings will probably even be people who watched Maniac or Grand Piano.
You know what? Last week I was telling my mom about Elijah Wood being at the film festival, and the only cultural touchstone she had, I was like, Frodo Baggins from The Lord of the Rings. She was like, I don't watch that bullshit. No, the reference that she got was The War. Do you remember that movie with Kevin Costner? That was because I was like, Radio Flyer. Nope. I didn't mention The Good Son. My mom wouldn't know that movie either. It's so weird that I was like, The Lord of the Rings, those movies made literally $1 billion, Mom.
My mom only knows him from the Don Johnson, Melanie Griffith movie, Paradise.
I bet my mom would know that too. Yeah, so that's funny. Like, oh, the kid from Paradise. That's nice, Brian.
I tried to get her to bring to send me the VHS tape she has of it, so I could. But she couldn't find it in time.
I mean,
she probably didn't look for it.
I was gonna say I go to Comic-Con in San Diego every year, Johnson. Elijah Wood is usually there. And this past year, we saw a flyer that said, DJ Elijah Wood. And like, what? It's insane. So we go to this, you know, crazy club, and with a badge, it was free to get in. So we get in. And coincidentally, I made a Vine at this party of this Wolverine dancing in the middle of a dance circle. Somehow made it onto a, not Reddit, what's that one? BuzzFeed. Somebody did a BuzzFeed top 10 thing, and that Vine got in there. I don't know how. But anyway, so we go there, and dude was so lit, okay, that it was like, he wasn't even. There was another guy DJing, and he was kind of putting the records back, sort of thing. But he was the one on the flyer, you know. And so at one point, me and my buddies were like, "Frodo, Frodo!" Oh, no. And then everybody started joining in. He like just his head went back and his arms went out. Dude, it was so.
I would like to one day be so well known that I just get paid to show up and put records back for people, right? As a DJ.
I want the level of fame where you can put my name on a flyer and people will just show up because it's me.
Right.
Like, that's total, like, I am that narcissistic.
What's he going to be doing?
Who knows? Kim Kardashian just has to show up at a place. Like, oh, Kim Kardashian will be there. Like, Kim Kardashian is famous enough that all she has to do is change her hair color and it's news for a week. It's crazy.
Guys, this has been the Kim Kardashian podcast.
The Kardash cast.
Every time we change subjects, I'm just going
to
do that.
It's the Kardash cast. I have to say that, like, going back to the movie, one of the things I like about it is that it's a really, there are very few bells and whistles on the story of this. Like, it's very simply told, and it really focuses on the characters.
Kind of the story goes away after, like, the first act. Like, yeah. Pretty much once they get rid of the drug addict guy, then it just kind of meanders from, you know, this to this, and there isn't really a story at that point so much.
I like it. It reminds me of Jim Jarmusch movie. It also reminds me of the Quentin Tarantino penned and Tony Scott directed film True Romance. And Saeed from this movie reminds me of Gary Oldman's character from the very beginning of True Romance. And so I was like, oh, he's the Gary Oldman character. Like, he's definitely gonna die pretty early on.
Tyler, I blanked out. You hit your references per second.
Quoted. I know. Done. Gary Oldman and Quentin Tarantino and Tony Scott. No, and I think every plot element of this movie is introduced just to fall away, because we get introduced to a lot. Like, now that you mention it, I'm thinking about, like, there's the drug dealer guy. Yeah. Like, what? There was the one scene with the black balloon. Like, what was it? I don't know, like a really fucked up Goo Goo Dolls video.
I was really hoping they'd put Goo Goo Dolls black.
That's what made me think.
I need a literal song to match this.
Everything has to be literal. Brian has no imagination. Everything has to be literally.
Right. So then the baby's black balloon needs. I was like, oh, I get it, because it's a black balloon.
Yes. There's the actual drug dealing, which goes nowhere. The chick at the club. The ecstasy,
that felt like one of those like 60s go-go movies where there's just a party in the middle that they go to where girls just, you know, dancing in the go-go, you know, in going between cages and things, like something I'd watch on Mystery Science Theater that would be in there. Monster a go-go or something. Yeah,
another thing which may not be in Iran is a 60s era Ford Thunderbird.
Yeah. Super awesome car. Yeah, that car was, I immediately sat up. I was like, yes. Well, you know, most people go for like the Mustang or the Camaro. They don't usually go for the Thunderbird.
The whole idea too behind it as being billed as an Iranian vampire movie is, it's even kind of, the title of the movie itself will kind of throw you off. Because if you think when you know, the Western idea of Iran is just hearing the title, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Yeah.
Sounds already like bad stuff's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, so it's interesting that I thought it was interesting that they used the burqa the way they did and how it almost became like a cape for her when she walked around.
Cool. Yeah. Is it just the headdress that's the hijab? I always forget like what the actual name for everything is. But yeah, there's one scene where as she's running, it sort of billows out and becomes almost Batman-esque. I thought that was really kick-ass.
Or maybe she was on the skateboard.
Yeah, probably.
That is so awesome.
That was a cool scene, yeah. But I also liked when he was all, you know, you know, he just left the party and he said, "Hey, I'm Dracula." I like that. I thought that was cool.
It was definitely, it was like really on the nose, but I was like, yeah, I like this. There's part of this movie that's really cute. Like when they meet, it's what I like about it is that it's really about these characters. And God, I've forgotten the main dude's name. I had it written down.
Arash.
Yes. Yeah, Arash. He's, what I like is that he's unassuming. And I almost wish they hadn't gone to the kissing scene halfway through, because I kind of wanted them to have more of a bonding experience, like where they talk about music or whatever, because I kind of like that he is different from everyone so far that she's attacked. I like that about the movie, that he's not like vulgar in this way. And like, he's kind of unassuming and not just this, like such a, for lack of a better phrase, such a man. I liked it. And, so I kind of like the dynamic between those two characters. So yeah, I forgot that the plot kind of goes away, Drew. I'm kind of harping on that now that you bring it up. There's no,
you know,
nothing.
You know, what's interesting though, I think most filmmakers or script writers at some point would have made her, you know, once she, you know, they did the kiss and all that, turn him. Yeah. And that never happened. Mm-mm. Which I thought was cool.
Yeah, I kind of like the betrayal of the father as the thing, instead of like she betrays him, but only tangentially, because she admits to him, like she's like, "I've done some bad shit," and he's like, "I don't care." I kind of like that it's not her betraying him, like she does, but only through killing his father. I think that was
doesn't
a really
that kind
interesting
of freedom
touch.
Though to be able to do what he does by the end of it. I mean, it's kind of like that's a chain he kind of had. You know, an anchor, I guess.
Did you guys also get? I kind of got a vibe of Let the Right One In with this movie. Did you guys get that at all?
No? I actually have never seen Let the Right
One. I mean, as much as a lot of recent vampire fiction came to mind, I think your Jarmusch stuff.
Yeah. Only Lovers Left Alive.
I kept waiting for her to run into the lovers from Only Lovers Left Alive.
I wrote down that's my Jarmusch comment also is, oh, look, it's like Jim Jarmusch made a vampire film. Oh,
where did they go in the end of that movie? Did they go to
Algiers? Weren't they in that? That's where he was. She was originally. Yeah. Didn't they just go back there?
Yes, they did.
Okay,
I figured they could make their way to Iran.
Exactly. I kept waiting for her to throw the dad in that horrible body pit that was just on the outskirts of Bad City.
Yeah.
Was that her dumping ground, or was that just a general Bad City dumping ground?
Who knows?
I don't know. I mean, there was enough bad stuff going on, I guess.
You don't get a name like Bad City without bad stuff going down.
It's very, like, I just imagine that it's just like, oh, here's where everyone, it's kind of like that park from, the podcast about Baltimore.
Lincoln Park.
Yeah, it's just like, that's just where people dump their bodies. They just all end up there. I figured that's what it was. Like, everyone who kills, like, oh, no one's going to know the difference because they all go there.
We don't have the police force to really investigate it.
Yeah, no one cares. It's just, if you're going to dump it, don't dump it in the city. It's going to stink. Dump it out there where everyone dumps their bodies.
For God's sakes, we're not ancient Rome.
But yeah, I mean, I do like... I think I just like the simplicity of everything about this movie. Saeed was a cool character. I kind of wish he had hung around, because he's really, I don't know, transgressive for like, but this movie's really like restrained and doesn't attempt to do too much. Like, it doesn't go overboard to try to like gussy it up with things. So I almost felt like he was too garish to be in this movie. So like when he died, I was like, fair enough. I guess like if you're going to, I guess you do have to die. That's just kind of a function of you being in this movie, like you need to go.
He would then go on to form the group Die Antwoord.
God,
that's what my wife says. He looks just like that guy. Yeah, I guess so.
But no, I mean, I don't know. Like, there's not a lot that has to happen in this movie, though. I kind of like that. It's just, it almost feels like, I mean, it does, or like a Richard Linklater movie from the early '90s, where it's just like these
Except
scenes
they don't
happen
talk nearly enough.
No, they don't. It's not like,
they'd
hey,
be philosophizing the entire time,
which is I haven't watched it yet. Which a future episode of ours will be Spring, and that's been billed as Linklater meets what you call it, H.P. Lovecraft. So I'm assuming that means it's going to be talking.
Well, both of them are wordy, so
Yeah, well, yeah, then resolution was just, it's nothing but talking. It's just shots of mouths.
What if it's just what if they only say it's like Lovecraft because it's really racist? Because Lovecraft apparently is like everything you read like about Lovecraft, he's just like a really racist guy.
All the bad parts of Lovecraft, and
like even among early 20th century people, Lovecraft stood out as a racist guy. Like even early 20th century people were like, step back a little bit, HP. Like,
he's pretty racist.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's the one story I think. Is it At the Mountains of Madness where he has a cat named Nigger Man? I think it is. I think so. Like that's. I remember reading that story several years ago and going, I don't. Everyone says this guy's really good, but I don't know if I want to keep going with this story. Like, what's this? Seems really like that's really overt.
Where you're reading it and you actually kind of look over your own.
No, I'm like, what? No, I don't believe this. I'm gonna put it away.
This is no good.
Yeah. So anyway.
Did your wife enjoy the film? Did she watch the whole thing?
She did watch the whole thing. Yeah, she liked it. She definitely liked it. I don't know. Can't really comment too much for her. But
did your kids like it?
Did not. Definitely not watch it. Watched it after they went to bed.
Yeah.
It's one of those, speaking of kids, one of those frightening scenes I've seen in a movie recently was the scene with her and the street urchin.
Absolutely.
It's pretty, yeah. Didn't know what she was going to do there.
Well, she's just an unknowable character as far as you don't really know what her motives are. You don't. I mean, she's not necessarily a moralistic character. I mean, it didn't feel like she was asking.
She's killing bad people for the most part,
right?
Or at least just like people she finds to be.
She's like, the Dexter of vampires.
Yeah, yeah, kind of.
And at one point, going back to the way she was dressed as well. I even got a couple of times where when she was handing the gold to the prostitute, the burqa looked as it draped down. I was like, oh, look, it's No Face from Spirited Away. Mm. As she dropped the gold in the hand, I was like, oh, man, it's just like that scene where he's trying to...
Some Miyazaki.
Yeah.
Is that just the hijab that we're going with there?
I'm probably...
That's fine, Brian. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. You said Iran.
I'm not an expert. I'm just...
It's fine. We know.
Iranian.
Everybody calls it different things. Yeah. My mom calls it a chador, and so.
Well, that's way off. It's clearly IRA. No, yeah, like what? I mean, she's not like a moralistic character. I mean, the vampire, not your mom. Like the vampire. The girl. She doesn't actually have a name. She's not moralistic or anything. That's why it was so unsettling because I didn't think she'd kill the kid, but I also didn't quite know why she was doing that, and she didn't stop. Like, that was the unsettling part. I was like, what is she looking for?
And she's really pretty.
Yeah.
But I kind of attributed it to just, when she got hungry, she had to eat kind of thing.
Yeah. When there's not a lot of violence in the movie. I mean,
That ear piercing might have been one of the most violent things that happens.
I really like that moment. It's not something you expect on a first day. I was like, that's kind of a cool touch. Especially when she like winces away and her teeth come out and she tries to hide. I thought that was a really cool. I thought it was really, really,
the
really
teeth coming out was definitely a True Blood kind of.
I hate the retractable teeth.
You don't like those?
Either have teeth or not. The retractable teeth. The way True Blood does the teeth are stupid though. Everything
about that show is stupid.
Like they click in and out. Like hers is a little less. You know.
Do you think it should be like a growing? How are you? Are you a fan of the growing fang?
I think, why don't they just have fangs? They can't come out in the day. Why are they trying?
It's evolutionary.
Why is the vampire trying to pass that much? Seriously.
It's an I would attribute to an evolutionary reason. I think it's kind of a question I was going to ask is, do you think they knew about vampires in this world? Like, do you think they know about vampires?
Yeah, it is never clear. That's a good question.
So I would say that it's an evolutionary reason. They developed over millions and millions of years because if you saw someone with those teeth, you'd be like, vampire, kill it. Kill it with fire. But because they can retract.
Maybe think what we do in the shadows. We have to watch. You have to watch that.
I
want to
see
talk
it.
About that. Oh, okay. It's so funny. Yeah.
Maybe we can do that for the podcast. Isn't that like kind of penciled in for later this month? No, it's playing here in Nashville. So
yeah, I just went and saw it last week and it's hilarious. Oh my gosh.
And it's playing next week at the Chattanooga Film Festival.
Oh, okay. So I just watched it.
Yeah.
Gotta watch it. Fantastic. It would make a great double bill with this.
But haven't we done comedies before and it winds up that our comedy is not as good as the comedy we watch?
Yeah, like we end up just like mimicking the jokes.
Us.
We either end up mimicking the accents of the jokes, and when we say it, it's way less funny because we're not that funny. We're just guys who talk about horror movies. Like, Brian, you're accidentally funny sometimes, but I'm not, so...
That is true. You're not funny.
So it almost feels like this movie wants to harken back to an earlier time. Like, I know that it has some, like, more recent sort of zombie fare, but, I mean, excuse me, vampire fare, but, like... It almost feels like it wants to harken back to the 80s in a way. Maybe like The Lost Boys or something, though not showing glitzy, because it has like, oh, I see that Frog Brother. Yeah, nice. Sorry, it distracted me. I can't think of what I was going to say. No, because at one point there's like a Reagan mask in the club and all the posters on the wall are vaguely... Like, that wasn't Madonna on one of the covers of the albums that's hanging on?
It bothered me so much.
Who was that? Do you know who that was? Brian, do you know who that was?
I thought it was Madonna.
I thought it was Madonna. It was supposed to be
Madonna, but like an artist's rendition of Madonna, because it wasn't. Was it the True Blue cover?
I don't know. Like, something I didn't recognize like
that. Because it was in the short hair, the super short hair
period. Yeah.
But was it not? I mean, I just felt that was kind of shorthand. That was the filmmaker's shorthand for this is Iran or some other place that is either culturally behind or it's in a different, slightly different time period. But I still felt it's more like this is where this is culturally as opposed to, you know, that was.
To be honest, before the internet, that was 100% true. I mean, they were 5, 10, 15 years behind everybody else. But now, I mean, everybody has internet and they know stuff in real time. So,
internet, the great equalizer. Let's restrict it.
I think it was more. I take it more of like just a stylistic choice, as though like it seems like this the filmmaker is really just into 80s stuff, which I'm cool with. I mean, it is one of the most complete aesthetically. It's one of the most complete movies I think we've watched as far as the way that it approaches everything. And we have this sort of like emo late 80s. I mean, even the main character even looks kind of like Robert Smith in that one scene after the party when they first kiss. So I feel like it's aesthetically an 80s movie. Not over the top, but it just has that feel of like emo and sort of like sensitive and tender and all these other things. Even with the violence, huh?
That's an Iranian Chris Kattan.
Okay. Is that what you went with? Is that kind of what you were thinking?
There's a couple of points where I was like, hey, look, it's Chris Kattan.
One of the weird things, like at first, the first thing I got that was like Jim Jarmusch was him carrying the cat at the beginning. I just kind of realized that was just really setting up the entire movie. I didn't even think about that until just now, that him carrying the cat was just like telling the audience, hey, this cat's going to matter later in the movie a lot.
It's the whole the gun theory.
Well, it's the cat theory. If you introduce a cat in the first scene, you have to...
If a cat isn't shot in the...
the Schrodinger's cat theory.
So, yeah, no, it was cool. Like, it just set it up pretty obviously. I'm trying to think of other... Like, nothing else really even happens with the car. The hooker plays out, but only to the extent that the dad dies. Like, she doesn't really have a resolution. She's just a part of this thing. I guess it fits her life philosophy where she's like, nothing really ever changes. People don't ever change.
Well, I think it's going to be for this filmmaker, Anna Lily Amirpour, is that how you pronounce her name? Amirpour. Mm-hmm. We mentioned Nicholas Winding Refn and stuff like that. I think this, we're getting our the next decade's auteurs, their works now, and seeing what could become. I mean, Refn's actually making his own horror film, right? That's his next film, is a horror film based on...
I think all of his movies are horror movies.
That's true. But Elizabeth Bathory, he's setting it in like 1980s LA, though, with like models and stuff like that. So,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah, so, which totally sounds like it would be a, what's his name? An Ellis. Bret Easton Ellis would write
totally.
It.
Yeah, but, totally.
But no, I think that we're seeing, I mean, she definitely has her own a style, and her vision comes through very clear in the shots that she establishes in the scenes too. Like the, you know, as he's out there outside waiting for her in the power plant, just that wide shot, him down in the corner and the, you know, the smoke billowing from the power plant. So,
it's really good, like the movie just looks awesome. Just every shot looks really cool.
Well, I mean, this is still, I mean, the big, you know, deep dark secret is black and white cinematography just kind of looks cool. I mean, does, I don't want it in everything, and it doesn't work for everything, but it has its aesthetic moments. And when you're doing this, which I thought it was kind of like, it was like new wave meets, you know, new wave via comic book or something like that is how it kind of plays out at times. And I thought that, you know, was a wise choice.
And you know, that power plant scene was so authentically Persian, man. Like when he's like, hey, you know, it's this girl, he wants to date her, I brought you a hamburger, and she's not even eating it, mainly because we know she, you know, sucks blood, but the whole conversation, he's like, oh well, you don't want it, I don't know anybody who doesn't have, you know, who doesn't like hamburgers. And you know, in English it seems like a regular conversation, but in Farsi, like, that is definitely the type of you know, kind of respectful banter that you would have when you've just been dissed in a certain way, when you're, you know, kind of doing the courtship type deal.
Well, that's interesting. But that's what you got from listening to the actual language being spoken versus what was coming across on the subtitles, or just
I didn't really pay too much attention to the subtitles, although they were pretty spot on. They were pretty spot on. Because usually when, and this is just in general, when subtitles are written for, you know, any, whether it's Japanese or, you know, what have you, they don't translate it literally. They translate, you know, if there was a filmmaker that was making this movie in English, what right. would that character be saying right now? You know, so sometimes it's wildly different just so that, you know, as an American, we would understand it. But this was, you know, they did a pretty good job, but it's not in that instance, it wasn't even what was in the script. It's, you know, the situation and the types of things that he, you know, how it was written, like what he would say in that situation. Whereas, you know, I don't know, you know, in an American film, he might've just swatted it out of her hand or not mentioned it at all. And he's bringing it up, you know, oh, well, I don't know anybody who, I don't know. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you totally did. Well, how did
I would definitely, if I brought a girl a hamburger and she didn't take it, I'd definitely swat it out of her hand and say, well, now the ground can eat it.
I just eat it.
Brian's every first date ever, bringing a girl a hamburger.
That's the one, test.
Want a hamburger?
Her response would be, because it's a first date, you motherfucker. You brought me a hamburger? What the fuck is wrong with you?
I thought we were going to eat. I didn't know you would be bringing me a hamburger.
Yeah, I thought we were going to a restaurant. I didn't know that you were bringing me some roadside bullshit.
That's Beverly Hills Persian girl, I think.
So as far as, like, I don't want you to speak for, you know, all Persian people, but how would you, like, how has the response been in the community regarding this movie? Do you have any idea? Do you know, like, or how do you think people would respond to this movie?
I personally haven't heard a lot from the Persian community on it, but I think it's interesting because, you know, like I said, there's no Bollywood in Iran, but they make a ton of movies, some of which are straight up ripoffs. Like I saw one a few years ago that was literally Groundhog's Day. It was literally like,
I would love to see that
right over there. You know, there's no fellatio in Persian movies.
Right.
There's no, you know, so it was, again, kind of going back, it's definitely an American film. So it's going to be interesting to see how Persians react to it. I don't know. I think they'll like it, but, you know, again, there's a lot of taboo just in that, you know, fake city.
Probably the nudity as well wouldn't play super well. When I saw that, I was like, I don't know if this was filmed in Iran.
Yeah. So most of the movie we spent trying to decide whether or not it was really Iran or if it was filmed in America.
As soon as I saw Marshall Manesh, I was like, I don't think this was filmed. Like, that's when I started to do the...
where the mystery still remained for me, since I didn't know who he was.
Well, I saw him and I was like, I'm either being racist or that is the cab driver from How I Met Your Mother. And turns
I leaned over to Gina. I said, is that who I think it is?
Is that Rajit?
Like, it's Rajit. Well, apparently
the vampire was from, she had a role in Argo. So I think they got a couple of big, not big names, but, you know.
Yeah, there were a lot of American language. Like when I saw the, I think the girl was in Argo. When I saw that, I thought, oh, this. And then the prostitute, God, she's in a TV show that I don't watch, but I recognized her vaguely. So I, when I saw her, I was like, okay, this seems like it's an American production. But yeah, I can't. What do you think of the ending? I think is kind of like one of the lingering. My notes are pretty much done, but the ending is kind of, where do you see, it's almost like the Graduate ending. Where do you see them going? Are they free? Are they happy? Or like, do you think he resents her for killing his dad? Or you think he's happy that
eventually she does turn him. I mean,
think so?
I think just by, I mean, at some point, I think in the vampire human, dynamic, that's either going to have to happen or she just kills him and moves on.
God, that's so fucked up to think. Like, at some point, she just gets tired of him and kills him. Like, she's probably done that before at some point.
Fucked up?
It is. Like, it's crazy to think about.
I mean, I thought that when he comes and sees his dad, the body that they found was his dad. It's like, you can tell that he's grief. It's like there's grief in his face, but there's also that sense of relief. It's over with him. And I think that when he sees a cat and realize, puts two and two together, that's the cat. She probably killed his father. That, like, the relief kind of outweighs any kind of anger, because she did take a burden off of his shoulders.
Plus, what else is he going to do? She's going to kill him. I mean, if he reacts differently, I mean, he doesn't really have much of an option there.
I like that they didn't have a conversation about it. I like that it just all played on screen. I think too few movies. Like, they don't let the visual aspect of the film tell you what's going on. Like, if it were another movie, if it were like higher profile movie, they would have this big screaming match about it. I'm glad that it didn't have that.
Yeah, it's also very obvious that they're both under 25, because anybody over 25 would just not make those rash decisions. What are we gonna do about money? Oh my god!
Like, we just met. I don't know that I want to go on a road trip with you. I got all this stuff.
And a cat.
Yeah,
don't forget they're taking a cat on the trip.
And you only have a two-seater car, really.
Yeah,
mileage like on this thing.
I want to see the sequel. I think the sequel like turn it into kind of like the Squid and the Whale, like, but with a vampire.
A girl walks home alone at night with a cane.
Or like UHF Gandhi 2. It's a girl walks home alone too.
Gandhi 2.
Acrobatics. Sam Raimi style.
No more Mr. Passive Resistance.
I think that's our first UHF reference. Maybe not, but that's the first one I remember.
I've never made a UHF reference.
The only other one I probably would have made would have been Conan the Librarian at some point.
I think maybe we did at one point. I think Conan the Librarian might have made it.
You don't know the Dewey Decimal System?
No, I think I referenced You Get to Drink from the Fire Hose. I think I beat all of them.
Oh, gotcha.
No, you didn't.
I'm pretty sure I did.
Brian, I'm pulling the music up. I don't know what else to tell you. I guess I could have texted you.
I saw the thumbs up.
Okay, next time just nod.
Okay. Well, like, we're going to wrap it up here. Like to thank Shahab for joining us.
Thank you.
Yeah. I hope you had a good time. And make sure you go see his short, or not go see it. I mean, you can see it from the
cover. Yeah, so go to YouTube and search Susanna's Lesson. You'll see a whole bunch of, oh, Susanna, but skip over those and, look for the cowboy thumbnail.
And we'll link to it in the show notes of our show. So people who are listening, they just go to thehorriblepodcast.com, click on it, or look on the iTunes page. It'll be on there as well.
Absolutely. And go see A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
The great
movie.
You can
rent it now on VOD, or come see it at the Chattanooga Film Fest with
us. Fantastic movie. One of my, I've been saying this a lot lately, but one of the top 10 that I think we've seen, I really liked it a lot.
Kyler's one of the top 10, 100 episodes, there's 40 top 10s.
He says it like, sorry, this is good, but I think you really meant it on this one.
I really meant it.
The other ones I always doubted. The other ones, this one I do believe. Yeah,
I'm always led by emotion. So usually, like, every time I see a good movie, I'm like, this is one of my favorites. But this one really is as good.
We should do a better job.
I'm always led by criticism. It's like, this is never as good as it is.
I know. I was all high about it. And Drew, you were like, oh, yeah, well, the plot kind of goes away. I'm like, Drew, damn it.
I had to write a review about it like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So. Well, maybe we should do it like Drew, because I know Tyler probably watches it the night before, and I watch it the night before. We're still high off the emotion of it.
I know. I need to watch it sooner so I can go all clinical and talk about it without emotion.
Don't lose that magic, Tyler. Don't lose that magic.
Shahab, thanks for coming on the show, man. I'd actually love to have you on again if you'd like to come on anytime. Like, you're welcome. Just jump on Skype and say, hey, I'm doing this.
All right. Yeah.
Sounds good, man.
Horror.
All right, cool. We'll see you next
guys.
Time.
I'm Brian. Bye.
I'm Tyler.
I'm Drew.
And
Shahab.
See you next time.